Larkin, Judge Hal Brooks, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes Jr. presiding.
Good morning, you may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, September 20th, 2022. We have four cases on our calendar today. All are set for oral argument. The first one is A22-0473. Carl, and please forgive me if I mispronounce the name, Pinchinot?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Versus Allstate Insurance Company. I do know how to pronounce that one. Counsel, both of you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes by respondent for rebuttal, if you so choose. We have three microphones set up. If you want, you can use the one closest to you, which is on a static table, or you can use the one in the middle, and that one you can move up and down. And that one does have the timer on it, so you can watch that. It's totally up to you as to which one you would like to use. That's totally your preference. Otherwise, all other rules of appellate practice apply. Appellant, when you are ready, please feel free to approach the podium, state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and you may proceed.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Matthew Brennigan for the appellant, Carl Pinchinot. May it please the court, counsel. From the case of State Farm versus Liberty Mutual, 678 Northwest 2nd, 719, which was a Minnesota appellate court case from 2004, quote, an arbitrator's findings of fact are final. The district court in this case, with all due respect, vacated Carl Pinchinot's arbitration award because Judge Knudsen found that his getting treatment in Minnesota cannot in any circumstances be construed as reasonable. In the case of Nicollet Restoration versus the City of St. Paul, 533 Northwest 2nd, 845, it's a Minnesota Supreme Court case from 1995, and also the seminal case on this issue, Weaver v. State Farm, 609 Northwest 2nd, 878, Minnesota Supreme Court, 2000. Reasonableness is a determination to be made by the arbitrator, not by the court.
Mr. Brennigan, I think one of the biggest challenges for you in this case is the paucity of the arbitrator's award. I mean, it's very skeletal. Mm-hmm. There were no factual findings made. So I know your argument is that Judge Knudsen reversed a factual finding here, but I don't see the basis for that based on the arbitrator's failure to make findings.
Judge Halbrechts, in the arbitration, the American Arbitration Association Forum, the no-fault arbitration system, it's very uncommon for an arbitrator to make factual findings. However, every award is based on reasonableness. An arbitrator needs to determine if the claim is reasonable. If there's a claim for medical expenses, it's up to the arbitrator to determine whether that treatment was necessary and whether the cost of that treatment was reasonable. And that decision of reasonableness is set forth in the arbitrator's award. So if there was an award, the only issue and controversy in this particular claim was for 6 weeks of wage loss, and the maximum is $500 a week. And the arbitrator awarded the full amount. So because the arbitrator's award is only for reasonable claims that are properly supported by the evidence, it can be inferred that the 100% award was an indication that the arbitrator felt that the circumstances were reasonable. And if I could talk about those circumstances.
Well, can I just ask you before
sure.
you go there?
Yeah.
I mean, the arbitrator does not cite any portion of the no-fault statute as a basis for the award.
No. The materials provided to the arbitrator, the statement of the case of the claimant, based the entire claim on 65B44, subdivision 3, which provides claimants, insureds, with a certain benefit, a no-fault benefit. And that benefit is a payment of wage replacement for inability to work. The statute at 65B 44 subdivision 3 defines, or it expands, inability to work. It wants to clarify to say that it's not just a physical inability to work, but it also includes the time it takes to travel for treatment. Obviously, the time for treatment, it doesn't say a person has to be physically unable, but they want to expand and be as generous as possible with that benefit. So the arbitrator did hear significant evidence about the difficulty that the claimant had in obtaining medical treatment in Florida in the spring of 2020. There were numerous phone calls that he had made to try to find physical therapy. And frankly, almost all of the clinics were either closed, as you would recall. I mean, it's hard to even think back now to what life was like back in March of 2020, when the COVID first became real to us. But especially in Florida, everything shut down. People were not leaving. And the arbitrator heard that evidence and made a decision that it was reasonable for him to get this needed treatment in Minnesota, which cured his problems. He didn't have any other treatment after that.
So when you're looking at subdivision 3E, you, as I understand your argument, are taking the word reasonable that modifies travel time and expanding it. Would you agree with that?
No, not at all. And I guess with all due respect.
Fine, I'd love to hear your interpretation.
Yeah, okay, so the way I read 65B44 subdivision 3, and you're reading the same one, so I'm not going to convince you if it's not there, but the way I read it is that it says, for the purposes of this section, an injured person who is unable by reason of the injury to work continuously includes but is not limited to a person who misses time from work to obtain treatment from any injury. So it's what the statute is saying is that it's trying to clarify that, this is in my opinion, I guess, that unable to work doesn't mean physically unable to work. The drafters of the act wanted to make sure that was expansive, and it was to include the time to obtain treatment for injury. But then I think there was also debate, well, what about if the claimant gets sick leave from their employer or has vacation time, doesn't actually lose any work? Well, they added that clause in there. It says even if they are receiving benefits from their, you know, so they don't have it. And then they also include, well, what about, you know, when it says time for medical treatment, what about the time they spend traveling for medical treatment? Okay, well, yeah, we're going to include that. It includes the time. We did not make a claim for his time spent traveling for medical treatment. That was not what this was about. We could have, under subdivision 2 of that statute, 2.3, allows for the reimbursement of transportation expenses. We did not ask that Allstate compensate him for his airplane ticket from Florida to Minnesota to receive treatment, because that wasn't what our claim was about. Mr. Pinchonet was unable to receive the treatment that he needed in Florida. He was able to get it in Minnesota. It was impractical for him to fly here, get treatment, fly home, do that twice a week for 6 weeks. We could have and asked for the transportation expense reimbursement, but I feel like that would have been a real reach. But he did need to get the treatment. The judge who vacated the decision vacated it as because to receive such common treatment so far from home was unreasonable under any circumstances. But he couldn't get it in Miami at the time. And that was what, and that's why we leave the decisions of fact up to the arbitrator, because they're the ones hearing the evidence. And when the judge made his decision earlier this year in Minnesota, it's difficult for all of us to remember what it was like when the pandemic first shut down the country in 2020, and none of us know what it was like in Florida, which was, as you recall, worse than it was in Minnesota.
Although the record for arbitration did contain, I believe, but correct me if I'm wrong, respondent could speak to this, a copy of the mayor's, Miami-Dade County mayor's statement about what would be open, what would be not open, and healthcare facilities were deemed to be essential, mm-hmm. and they were not closed. I mean, they were functioning.
Well, I'm not sure that it is part of the record of arbitration. That was evidence that respondent provided, and it was evidence that the arbitrator considered in his decision of whether it was reasonable for Mr. Pinchonet to get the treatment in Minnesota. He also heard evidence from Mr. Pinchonet that despite what it said that these were open, they weren't open. He was unable to find them.
I don't know that, was his testimony that they weren't open or they were not accepting new patients or what was?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to get into that, and I will, but.
Well, that's all right.
Because the court is not supposed to consider factual determination, but his testimony was they were not open and they would not take new patients.
Okay. So if I'm understanding, I don't want to dominate questions that my colleagues are precluded, but you're taking the word reasonable in 3E, mm-hmm. and saying the arbitrator, based on that, has the authority to make a factual determination of whether choosing to treat in a particular location is reasonable.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Sorry, I don't mean to.
No, that's fine. I really didn't have anything else to add. I the appellant asked this court recognize that while the amount in controversy is small, the issue of an arbitrator's ability to be the final deciders of fact is historic, fundamental, and based on significant amount of case law, and it should not be compromised. The appellant asks that this court follow the precedent and restore the arbitrator's award. Judge.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Is this purely an issue of fact, or is this really an issue of application of the law to the particular facts? Because the discussion seems to be of how of the interpretation of not only 65B.44, but isn't it how it's applied? And while you know, I certainly understand your argument in terms of the interpretation of the statute. Don't we still have to look at how it's interpreted as to whether or not it's reasonable for somebody to leave the state to go to, you know, travel, I don't know how many thousands of miles to another state, take time off to receive treatment? Mm-hmm. Isn't that really a mixed question of fact and law?
Well, every determination by a no-fault arbitrator is based in reasonableness, as I said earlier. I believe that...
And can I stop you? Is reasonableness, is that purely a factual issue, or is that a mixed question of fact and law?
Well, that is 100% factual issue, and that is specifically set forth... in Nicolet Restoration v. St. Paul, which said that reasonableness is a determination to be made by the arbitrator and not the court. It's also from Weaver. I have nothing further, but thank you.
No other questions. Right. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, my name is Nicholas Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S. I represent Allstate in this matter. The issues before the court today, there are two major ones, of course. The first one is whether or not the Minnesota No-Fault Act covers wage loss in a situation where a non-disabled claimant elects to treat outside of commuting distance. And the answer to that question is no. And it's no for three reasons. Number one, the statute is clear. The statute says wage loss is granted for the inability to work, and that includes travel time reasonable travel time to and from appointments. It does not say that wage loss is compensable for people who miss work because they choose to treat outside of a standard commuting distance from their home. In this case, that's exactly what Mr. Pinchonat did.
Where does the language say that?
Well, Your Honor, I can take a look here and reference 65B.44. If you look at subdivision 3D, inability to work means disability, which prevents the injured person from engaging in any substantial gainful occupation or employment on a regular basis for wage or profit for which the injured person is or may be training to become reasonably qualified. And then down in E, it says that includes reasonable travel time and lost income, vacation or sick leave benefits to obtain medical treatment for an injury arising out of the maintenance.
When you're reading subdivision 3C, aren't you reading out the reading it out of context?
No, Your Honor. I'm reading subdivision 3D that talks about the inability to work, and 3E, which talks about what that means.
But it says an injured person who is unable by reason of the injury to work continuously includes but is not limited to a person who misses time from work, including reasonable travel, including reasonable time, and lost income, vacation, or sick leave benefits, to obtain medical treatment. So it sounds like you're trying to modify reasonable travel time and tie that to obtain medical treatment. But doesn't that really tie back to includes but is not limited to a person who misses time from work to obtain medical treatment?
Well, Your Honor, it basically goes to define and explain the scope of what wage loss covers. Whether or not it covers things like if you have to leave early to go to seek medical treatment or come in late to work, that would be an example of reasonable travel time. It wouldn't just be the time for seeking medical treatment at the clinic, but also time to get from your house to the clinic back to work, for example. That would be the reasonable travel time that we're talking about here, and that's essentially what is delineated in the statute.
Is your argument in subdivision 3D that he did not have a disability, he was not a person with a disability?
Well, it would be partially that he does not have a disability, and I'll be addressing that. Whether or not the disability would come into play here is sort of a novel issue for the courts, but it was addressed in the case of Darby versus American Family. Wage loss in that case was no longer caused by a disability. The claimant in that case had a job lined up, planned to start it the day after the accident, couldn't start it for several weeks after the accident due to his disability. And when he became able to start it, the job had been filled. The court in that case correctly held that the wage loss was no longer caused by a disability after that point, and therefore it was not compensable under the No-Fault Act. And that acts as a guidepost for the court in this case to apply the law and say that what is really causing Mr. Pinchonet's disability here? Is it the fact that he can't go to work because can't physically work, or is it the fact that he chose to call six providers in Miami and then chose to skip over several municipalities and indeed several states to come to Minnesota and treat outside of his commuting distance? What is it that caused his inability to work? And it wasn't the disability that caused his inability to work. It was the fact that he chose to treat halfway across the country. And the statute is clear, that's nowhere here. An election to treat outside of the commuting range is not a covered reason for wage loss benefits. It's not anywhere in the statute.
I don't understand how you're reading the statute to prohibit that, though. How does the statute prohibit that? It doesn't. I don't think it addresses it at all.
It doesn't address it at all, but it's inclusive. It's an exhaustive list of things that are covered for wage loss. And the fact that it doesn't mention it.
Right, it is an exhaust. It's including but not limited to. It actually seems to cover not only what's listed here, but even more. So it seems to be a more expansive list.
Well, it delineates exactly what it covers, Your Honor. It covers reasonable travel time, lost income, vacation, et cetera, in 3E. It talks about the fact that it has to be caused by a disability. This case, it's not caused by a disability. It's caused by a decision to treat somewhere else. That's essentially the modifying provision there that really operates here. Now, the appellant argues that it's not travel time that they're seeking, it's wage loss, but the statutory language still applies. It still has to be caused by a disability, not a decision to treat somewhere else. And if you read reasonable, if we're going to read reasonable to mean that, actually able to work, that language in the statute really actually means only actually chooses to work, or if we're going to add the clause reasonable travel time to any destination, that leads to an absurd result. And so if we're going to look at this and say, that's how the statute is to be read, what's to prevent somebody who's injured from in Minnesota from choosing to treat in Tahiti or Mexico or Europe, and then to require the insurance company to pay for their time off for that period of time, when really they could have sought that common treatment here in Minnesota and gone to work the entire time.
So could he have worked during that 6-week period?
Absolutely. The record is undisputed. The facts are undisputed. He was not physically prevented from working by virtue of his injury.
So he could have worked and received physical therapy in a locale closer to his home?
That's correct and undisputed, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's supported by the record?
It is.
Okay.
Well, can I just say, it seems to be disputed that he could get the physical therapy there. I mean, clearly the claimant is saying it was unavailable to him, but there was never a restriction on his ability to return to work, that's for sure.
That's correct. There was never an ability to return to work. He called 6 physical therapy offices and then decided to come to Minnesota. He didn't call any offices outside of Miami. There are several other communities he could have called but didn't. That's also undisputed. It was heard by the evidence, it was evidence that was heard by the arbitrator and Judge Knudsen.
Is this a case of first impression, in your opinion?
It is. It is, Your Honor. I think Darby provides an important guidepost. I think if reasonable means what the appellant says it's going to mean, that's a lot of latitude. If that's the case, an arbitrator might find that the sky is brown and that's a reasonable finding. And if reasonable doesn't mean reasonable, if it means whatever the arbitrator says that it means, that creates an ambiguity. What does reasonable mean? Does it mean reasonable or does it mean whatever the arbitrator decides to find?
Well, could you comment on what the arbitrator has found here with respect to this award?
Well, I'd love to, Your Honor, but there was no memo associated with it, and I'd like to address that.
Before you address that, could I just ask one more question? Because I'm following the arguments, but I'm having a hard time deciding whether what I should be asking myself is, our decision in this case hinges on whether or not he could work, end of analysis. And if he could work, he doesn't get the benefit. Or should we be asking whether it was reasonable to travel to Minnesota for treatment that might have been available somewhere else, which is a separate issue, right? I mean, if the person's able to work, but they say, despite, in this area of the law is new to me. So the person's able to work, that's undisputed. But the person would like to nonetheless treat the underlying injury, even though it doesn't interfere with ability to work. Does that person still get lost income benefits? Or do you truly have to be unable to work to get those benefits?
So, Your Honor, the statute says you have to be unable to work. However, unable to work includes if you have to go miss work to go seek treatment. Let's say you have to go seek physical therapy, but otherwise you're perfectly able to work.
Okay, so it's not complete inability to work. You could get benefits if you're unable to work because you're seeking treatment. So this really does come down to whether travel time to Minnesota and lodging for 6 weeks is reasonable under the statute?
Correct, Your Honor.
And if that's it, does the case law require us to defer to the arbitrator's conclusion that the $3,000 was reasonable in this case?
It does not, Your Honor. So the first part of your analysis is correct. It's a question of whether or not that was reasonable. But reasonable is not a word without a meaning. It means something. It means reasonable. And if it doesn't, if it gets whatever the arbitrator decides it is, then it becomes an ambiguous term. And what we have here then is a question of statutory interpretation. Well, there's no citation to the legislative purpose saying that insurance companies should have to pay time off for whatever period of time somebody decides to travel outside the commuting distance and seek treatment that they can otherwise seek at home.
Can I just stop you there then? Because my next question is what we're determining an issue of fact or an issue of law?
It's an issue of law, and at the alternative, at the minimal alternative, it's a mixed question of fact and law, Your Honor. So,
and what case law do you have to support that? Because opposing counsel cited to the, I believe it was the Nicollet case, that reasonableness is a factual issue that we leave to the arbitrator to determine, to
yes,
find.
Yes, Your Honor, reasonableness is a very big rug that this issue is attempted to be swept under. But if the case of Gilder is to be followed, and it should be, it provides another important guidepost. So in the case of Gilder, an arbitrator, a claimant received a prescription for a mattress for right around $2,300 from his chiropractor or her chiropractor. And she submitted that as an expense to no fault. And the arbitrator found, hey, this is a reasonable expense, therefore it should be covered. And the court took a pause and it said, wait a minute, reasonableness isn't the only question here. We have to look at what's actually covered. Is a mattress actually covered under the No Fault Act? And it went deeper than whether or not it's reasonable here, and it looked at the actual language of the statute and determined no, mattresses are not covered under the No-Fault Act, be they reasonable or not. And that's exactly what the court should do here.
I'm sorry, let me just stop you there, because it's all very helpful. What if it's a situation where somebody needs treatment for the injury, and it's indisputed that it's unique treatment, it can only be provided by one particular provider in another state, and it's a two-week course of treatment. Would that be covered? Because there's no other option, clearly?
Potentially.
It seems to me that, I mean, if there's an agreement that in theory there could be a circumstance where the treatment is not available, the person has to go somewhere else for the treatment. If that's covered, then isn't, you know, whether or not the person actually has to go someplace for the treatment, in this case, a judgment call, and we give deference to the arbitrator on that?
Well, Your Honor, that poses an interesting hypothetical. It's not one that I've ever seen come up in my practice. It's not one that I've ever seen discussed in a case. We're talking about a no-fault act that deals with car accidents here. There's, to my knowledge, no such treatment that's ever arisen in a no-fault scenario.
And that's fair enough, but I mean, couldn't it? Let's say, for example, let's bring it a little bit closer to home. Let's say there was a car accident in Florida, and the only treatment available was at the Mayo Clinic located here in Minnesota. Would that be reasonable for that person to take 6 weeks off to receive that specialized treatment at Mayo?
I think that that's probably an interesting hypothetical, but I think it's probably never one that's going to come to fruition, nor could it.
Well, let's just assume it is. Would that be reasonable under the statute?
That would be a different scenario under the statute, not one that I'm not necessarily prepared to brief here. I think theoretically it could be. It might not be. I'd have to do a little bit more research into the matter
Fair enough, but doesn't that seem to indicate that it's really a fact-specific issue? In other words, isn't it really a factual finding?
No, Your Honor, it's not a factual finding. It's an issue of whether or not there's coverage, because I think we're deviating into the hypothetical quite a bit here, because the facts on the ground here, Your Honors, are that the claimant chose to treat in another state. He did not have to treat in Minnesota, He did not try to seek treatment in nearby municipalities where he wouldn't have to take this continuous time off and wouldn't have to treat outside community distance. He came to Minnesota because his wife and kids are here and he wanted to spend the time with them. He didn't come here because he had to treat here.
Counsel, what, this obviously is an issue of first impression, what would your syllabus point be if you were writing the opinion? What's the rule of law?
Your Honor, I would point to the statute. The statute does not say that one can get wage loss benefits simply for choosing.
Okay, but the statute says included but not limited to. So that language indicates there are other scenarios which aren't mentioned which might fall within the meaning of the statute.
Well, if the statute is read that way to become ambiguous, then the legislative
intent... How does that make it ambiguous?
Well,
there's Supreme Court case law that says just because a term isn't defined or something isn't mentioned doesn't mean that the statute is ambiguous. It just means the statute's silent.
Well, the question is, what does it mean? I think we're having a great discussion about why it's ambiguous because
Here's what I'm asking. Would you propose the syllabus point that says loss benefits are not available to a claimant who is capable of... not available to a claimant who chooses to treat outside of commuting area for his injuries?
Well, I would expand upon it. I think the syllabus, Your Honor, here would state that if a claimant loses out on wages only because he's choosing to treat outside of commuting distance, that's not a situation where wage loss applies. Wage loss of benefits are not available for that specific purpose.
So then it would perhaps say wage loss benefits are not available when they stem from the cost of obtaining treatment outside of the claimant's commuting area.
Well, in situations, I would add voluntarily choosing to treat outside of his commuting area.
Okay. So if a claimant voluntarily chooses to treat outside of his commuting area, he's not entitled to wage loss benefits stemming from his absence from work due to that treatment.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So we have to decide whether the choice to obtain treatment outside of the commuting area was voluntary.
Well, you don't actually have to decide that, Your Honor, because the facts are undisputed. He calls...
No, I'm just saying... the issue of law that this opinion. So we're going to say there has to be a determination whether or not the person voluntarily elected to treat outside of his commuting area.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly correct. And I think it...
And is that not a fact-specific determination?
It can be if the fact is disputed, but in this case, the fact wasn't disputed. He didn't have to come to Minnesota. That is undisputed. He chose to come to Minnesota because of a specific reason. That's also undisputed.
Okay, but the arbitrator's decision implies he had to come to Minnesota. There was evidence he presented saying, I couldn't get treatment in Florida because they were either not open or not taking new patients, so I went to Minnesota. I'd like loss wage benefits, and the arbitrator granted them. So isn't that the arbitrator making a finding that treatment was not available in Florida?
No, Your Honor, that's not the finding that the arbitrator made. The arbitrator simply made the finding that the claimant's decision to treat up here rather than down there was reasonable. The arbitrator was never asked to determine whether or not the claimant had to come to Minnesota, or whether he could have, for instance, gone to Sarasota or Palm Beach or Orlando or Georgia or Chicago or Kentucky or anywhere else in between Minnesota and Florida. That issue was never posed to the arbitrator. The arbitrator never decided whether the claimant had come to Minnesota. Whether he had to or wanted to was never a dispute. It was always stipulated that he wanted to come to Minnesota for a specific reason and that he did not attempt to seek treatment anywhere else. So that decision is voluntary, and that voluntary decision is whether or not it is the reason why we're here today, Your Honors. Whether or not a voluntary decision like that entitles someone to essentially...
So what I'm hearing you say now is really what we're dealing with is not only do we not have findings or a memo, this issue wasn't even raised before the arbitrator.
This issue wasn't raised before the arbitrator. The arbitrator, well, it wasn't raised because it wasn't argued. It was never contested. The arbitrator, nobody disputed that the claimant decided to go to Minnesota voluntarily. It was never alleged that he had to go to Minnesota.
Well, I guess I'm having a hard time understanding that when I'm hearing that evidence was presented saying he contacted six or seven clinics in his residential area and couldn't get treatment. So it sounds like he was trying to make the case that he didn't have treatment options in Florida and therefore chose to go to Minnesota.
He chose to go to Minnesota.
Understood. Okay.
He didn't have to. He didn't try to seek treatment anywhere closer within commuting distance. So I think that as a matter of public policy, if this does become a question of whether or not the statute means what either party states that it means, there is a public policy consideration that I want to make briefly, specifically that insurers don't rate for essentially paid vacations to seek treatment that's casual and common in other places. And if they're required by this decision to rate for that, it's going to have the effect of raising premiums. It's going to have the effect of raising premiums on a mandatory coverage that everybody in Minnesota, regardless of their financial status, whether they're able to absorb that increase in premiums, is able to sustain. So it's going to have a disparate impact on economically burdened Minnesotans. So that's just a public policy if we're going to consider whether or not...
Counsel, if you could wrap up, we're
over. Thank you, Your Honor. Lastly, I do want to say that the district court did properly vacate it. The case law is very clear on that. This wasn't a question of whether or not it was reasonable. It's a question of whether or not it's covered under the statute, and the district court reached the correct conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. And we did run over on time, but we did have some questions. It is an issue of first impression that we did want to address. Counsel, for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
With all due respect to Mr. Rogers over here, the issue of the arbitration was whether it was reasonable for Mr. Pinchonette to travel to Minnesota for treatment. Mr. Rogers presented evidence on the morning of the hearing, which included the state's guidelines that said that medical providers were essential service people. There was testimony from both sides on that specific issue. We went back. That was I don't know if it was a half an hour or an hour hearing, but it was on that. Now, this is the reason why appellate courts are not supposed to overturn issues of fact, because there's no record from the arbitration. We don't know what was said. We don't know what evidence was presented. I promise you that evidence of the reasonableness of his travel to Minnesota was the issue that was considered in the arbitration that morning. And it was the arbitrator's decision that, given the extraordinary circumstances of COVID, which the drafters of the act probably could not have envisioned that sections of the country would be shut down to medical treatment, that he was unable to work because he had to go to Minnesota to attend, to get medical treatment.
Was that specific issue raised before the arbitrator, or was that part of the facts that the parties agreed to that were undisputed?
That was the only issue raised in arbitration. We know the law allows for treatment while a claimant is getting medical treatment, so the only issue in the case was whether it was reasonable for him to travel to Minnesota to obtain that treatment because he couldn't get it in Florida.
I understand that. I guess my question is, did the parties agree that he voluntarily chose to go to Minnesota?
I wouldn't use the term voluntarily. He had no choice. He couldn't get the treatment that he needed. He had been in pain since February. He was able to get the physical therapy starting in June, and he got better. He couldn't get it in Florida, so it wasn't voluntary. He needed the treatment. The only place, whether it was Kentucky or Alabama or what, he wouldn't have been able to work during that period of time. It wasn't available in Miami, Florida, or anywhere near him.
Can I stop you there? Did he, could he have worked? Let's assume for the sake of our, I usually hate getting into hypotheticals, but I think we are here. Let's assume that there was a location near him in Miami where he could have received treatment. Would he have been able to work and then take time off to go get treatment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And he would have gotten treatment in Miami if he could have. He absolutely would have done that.
Okay. Is there anything on the record indicating that he looked in the Miami-Dade County area outside of Miami?
It was his testimony during the hearing that he did that. He called all around Miami, all around I don't know Miami, but in the immediate area, and he was unable to find any that were either open or willing to take new clients or patients. Yeah, that was discussed, and part of the, there is no record, so I can't say it was part of the record, but it was part of the argument. And the arbitrator heard that evidence, heard the arguments and closing arguments of respondents' counsel, of Allstate's counsel, and made a determination that given the extraordinary circumstances of the time, it was reasonable for Mr. Pinchonet to seek treatment in Minnesota.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. I was just checking with my colleagues to see if they had any further questions. Thank you both very much for your arguments. It was very, very helpful. We really appreciate you taking the time to hear our questions and answer them. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honors.